and fired several wild shots in Stewie's direction. Stewie dropped the bag and ran away, crashing through the timber like a bull elk. Stewie had outrun and outjuked the man with the pistol when he literally tripped over Annabelle, who was unaware of his approach because she was listening to Melissa Etheridge on her Walkman as she sunbathed nude on the grass in an orange pool of late afternoon sun. She looked good, he thought. Strawberry blonde hair, with a 2-day Rocky Mountain fire engine tan, 2 hours in the sun at 8,000 feet, created a sunburn like a whole day at the beach. Small, ripe breasts and a trimmed vector of pubic hair. He had gathered her up and pulled her along through the timber, where they hid together in a dry spring wash until the man with the pistol gave up and went home. She had giggled while he held her. This was real adventure, she said, and he had used the opportunity to run his hands tentatively over her naked shoulders and hips, and had found out, happily, that she didn't object. They made their way back to where she had been sunbathing, and while she dressed, they introduced themselves. She told him she liked the idea of meeting a famous environmental outlaw in the woods while she was naked, and he appreciated that. She said she had seen his picture before, maybe in Outside magazine, and admired his looks. Tall and raw-boned, with round, rimless glasses, a short-cropped, full beard, wearing his famous red bandana on his head. Her story was that she had been camping alone in a dome tent, taking a few days off from a freewheeling cross-continent trip that had begun with her divorce from an anal-retentive investment banker named Nathan in her hometown of Pawtucket, Rhode Island. She was bound, eventually, for Seattle. "I'm falling in love with your mind," he lied. "Already?" she asked. He encouraged her to travel with him, and they took her vehicle since the lone crew member had disabled Stewie's Subaru with 3 bullets into the engine block. Stewie was astonished by his good fortune. Every time he looked over at her and she smiled back, he was poleaxed with exuberance. Keeping to dirt roads, they crossed into Montana. The next afternoon, in the back seat of her SUV during a thunderstorm that rocked the car and blew shroud-like sheets of rain through the mountain passes, he asked her to marry him. Given the circumstances and the supercharged atmosphere, she accepted. When the rain stopped, they drove to Ennis, Montana, and asked around about who could marry them, fast. Stewie didn't want to take the chance of letting her get away. She kept saying she couldn't believe she was doing this. He couldn't believe she was doing this either, and he loved her even more for it. At the Sportsman Inn in Ennis, Montana, which was bustling with fly fishermen bound for the trout-rich waters of the Madison River, the desk clerk gave them a name, and they looked up Judge Ace Cooper, retired, in the telephone book. Judge Cooper was a tired and rotund man who wore a stained white cowboy shirt and elk horn bolo tie with his collar open. He performed the wedding ceremony in a room adjacent to his living room that was bare except for a single filing cabinet, a desk and 3 chairs, and 2 framed photographs, one of the judge and President George H.W. Bush, who had once been up there fishing, and the other of the judge on a horse before the Cooper family lost their ranch in the 1980s. The ceremony had taken 11 minutes. Which was just about average for Judge Cooper, although he had once performed it in 8 minutes for 2 American Indians. "Do you, Alan Stewart Woods, take thee, Annabeth, to be your lawful wedded wife?" Judge Cooper asked, reading from the marriage application form. "Annabelle," Annabelle corrected in her biting Rhode Island accent. "I do," Stewie said. He was beside himself with pure joy. Stewie twisted the ring off his finger and placed it on hers. It was unique. Handmade gold mounted with sterling silver monkey wrenches. It was also 3 sizes too large. The judge studied the ring. "Monkey?"